Welcome to The Next Step, episode number 371. In today's show, we will be looking at Pluto the planet, St. Thomas the doubter, Jimmy Carter the president, who's walking away from his church, just as Father McKenzie wipes the dirt from Eleanor Rigby's grave. Who was saved? Hey, we'll find out in just a few moments, because this is Father Voskan, a priest of the Armenian Church, inviting you to take the next step.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan, the acclaimed podcast series about spirituality through orthodoxy. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, and for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskan provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
So glad to have you joining us today. Ken is on vacation in Jakarta, wishing him the best. Probably a couple weeks he's going to be away. But we are here and broadcasting from the Glendale studio. I want to start off with a reflection. You know, as a priest, we are with people from cradle to grave, it's been said. You're there at their happy moments and their sad moments. And also as a priest, you get to officiate at funeral services. And this last few weeks, I've had a few of them. And I've walked from the grave very disappointed in, not people, but in how we are presenting the story and what is on the other side of that grave. And a song comes to my mind.
Eleanor Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave.
Of course, Eleanor Rigby, all the lonely people. And you know what? This is just a personal reflection, how I feel many times walking away from the grave. Like Father McKenzie, you wonder who's been saved. Has anyone been saved? What is the purpose of that funeral service? You know, we in the Armenian Church have a beautiful word for that funeral. It's called Hugarga Vorutyun. It means to send, Ugargel, to send the soul back to its maker. And in so doing, we reflect on the person, we reflect on his or her life, and also the celebratory nature of the end of life, that it does continue, that our Lord's words, come to me, all of you who have been heavy laden, all of you who have been sick, all of you who have suffered, come to me and I will give you rest. And in that rest, we have to find some satisfaction that we find in the resurrection. St. Paul says so beautifully, he says, I don't want you to be ignorant. That's the word he uses. Ignorant about those people who have no hope, like those people who have no hope. Because if we believe that Jesus died and raised, rose again, so too we believe God will raise those people who have died believing in Christ. And what a beautiful promise this is. And sometimes we get caught up in some of the cultural issues that are associated with funerals. And by that I mean things that we bring from, well, the excess baggage that we bring with us. Of course, Armenia, after the genocide, 70 years of communism, of atheism, of course, in the Middle East, where the predominant religion was Islam, and this idea of resurrection is lost. And really, how much we need to really bring about that message of resurrection to people. But it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one when people don't know the basic story that Christ died and rose again. And it is just, well, maybe they do know it, but it is only a story and not a reality. And something interesting happened this past week. In fact, it caught the attention of everybody on the globe, on the planet Earth, and it certainly caught my attention. As you know, those of you who listen in to Next Step know that I love these astronomical anomalies that happen now and then. But this one was an interesting one because the astronomical anomaly, the astronomy, the universe is there, but we went into it. Yes, I'm talking about New Dimensions, that small space probe that just did a flyby by the planet Pluto. And let me give you a Bible passage for that. Are you ready for that? Okay, let me share with you this story. It comes to us from the Gospel of John. It's a post-resurrection story. Gospel of John, chapter 20, describes this story. It says, "Now Thomas, one of the 12 disciples, was not with the other disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, 'We have seen the Lord.'" Okay, the disciples are telling Thomas, who was not with them when Jesus appeared to them after the resurrection, after this horrendous event of the crucifixion, Jesus has resurrected and he has appeared to the disciples. Thomas was not there. "And he said to them," Thomas said to them, "unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your fingers here. See my hands. Reach out your hands and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Jesus' words, okay? Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Now listen, this is really interesting. Thomas doesn't touch him, doesn't get near him. He just confesses, "My Lord and my God." Because of the clarity and the demand that Jesus made upon him, he recognized the risen Lord. Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Of course, that's a direction for all of us, isn't it? Because most of Christianity has not physically seen the risen Lord, but it is a matter of faith. Well, think about the flyby at Pluto, right? I mean, this spacecraft was sent out some almost 10 years ago, okay? Almost a decade ago. And shortly after it was launched, Pluto, which was, I think everybody had some kind of affinity to Pluto, right? Because I don't know what it was about it. It was just that distant planet, and it was so small, and it had a cool name too, Pluto, right? Like the dog in Walt Disney animation, and people were, I was, a lot of people were tied to it. Well, shortly after the spacecraft was launched back in 2006. Pluto was demoted from its status as a planet, as the ninth planet, into just a small piece of a chunk of ice going around the sun. Well, here it is, 9.5, almost 10 years later, and we're seeing the first pictures of Pluto. First of all, one of the pictures, or one of the dimensions that was sent back to us, showed us that Pluto was larger than we thought. But here's the interesting one. Much like Thomas, we are just basically hearing things from here and there. I mean, none of us could be sure that Pluto is there, right? You're just believing these images that have been brought to us since the 1930s when Pluto was first discovered. It was just basically something that was written by somebody and said, "Hey, there is something that is orbiting the sun." And we tend to believe it. It's in our textbook. We believe it, but you've not seen it. So, is there an element of doubt? Maybe not. Maybe because the authenticity that comes with a textbook, okay? So, you read it in the textbook and you know that there are 9 planets circling the sun. And you know that we are the third. You know, a few of us have had the opportunity to really do the measurements to figure out the orbit of Mercury and of Venus are smaller orbits than the Earth, and therefore the Earth is third in line, and Mars is fourth, and then there's Saturn and Jupiter, this huge, huge planet. If you've been looking out in the western sky here in the northern hemisphere, this past month has been beautiful because the planets Venus and Jupiter have been dancing in the sky. It is just really beautiful. They came close together a few weeks ago, and now they're drifting farther and farther apart. But what's interesting is Jupiter is this large, large planet, bigger than all the other planets, I think, combined, and then quite a bit, quite a many times bigger. And yet, when you look at it in the sky, next to Venus, a relatively small planet the size of Earth, or relatively the size of Earth, Jupiter is really dwarfed next to it, right? So it's basically on faith that you're believing that something is true. And this comes down to our faith too, in believing in an afterlife, in believing in the divinity of Christ. You're either going to believe it or you're not going to believe it. And it's based on the authority by which it is given to you. And here is the power of the church, where the church gives you that authority. In other words, an institution that has been there from the time of Christ, based on the witness of the martyrs, based on the witness of the saints, all of them pointing and saying that there is the resurrected Lord. And you don't have to feel bad going into that grave, because that grave is not the end. And where is the proof? Well, like Thomas, it's not in the seeing, but it's in the believing. And that's really all we have. Same thing with Pluto. I mean, we're getting these images, and now within the next 9 months, they're telling us we're going to be getting all kinds of new information about this small dwarf planet. In the olden days, back when I was a kid, this information was passed along to us by things called encyclopedias. They were not online. They were actually, they took up a good few shelves in the library, and you wanted to know something about something, you'd go there, and for instance, Pluto, you'd go and take out the P volume and look up Pluto, and it would tell you all that they knew up until that point about that planet. If we were living in back in those days, well, certainly that P volume would have to be completely rewritten now that this new information is coming in about Pluto. And certainly our images, our thoughts, and our experiences of Pluto are going to change. But basically, it comes down to an issue of faith, right? You can't see Pluto up there. Can't see it with your naked eye. You can see it with a high-powered telescope from over here. You can see it in the images that are coming through a website, NASA.gov, okay, the National Aeronautic and Space Administration. The United States has been presenting these images. But, again, it comes down to your faith. Do you have faith? And it's the same argument that Jesus made with Thomas. There's nothing different about it. He says, Thomas, you want to see? Come here. Take a look. And that's what we're saying right now. You're looking up at Pluto. Hey, you want to know if it's really a planet, how big it is, what it is? Here, take a look. But do you believe it or not? And see, Thomas makes this decision without touching him. And we too, basically, are making this decision. Because you're really technically not. You're believing that what's coming to you on that screen through that website is real, and you know, and not just something that somebody's sitting in a back room with what is that painting program? With any kind of painting program. Oh, geez, this is a bad one. It's escaping my mind. Photoshop. There it is, Photoshop. That it's not just somebody making some circles and making some spheres and sending out an image to us and saying, hey, there's Pluto over there, okay? You're believing it. You're believing it based on the information that has been given to you. I believe it. You believe it. In the same way with Christ. You have this choice. You could believe it, and you could say, okay, maybe it's a fabrication of somebody's mind. Maybe somebody with Photoshop just stood there and took care of the wounds and made him look alive again. Or you can say that I do believe it. And that's what the Christian does. Christian says, I believe it. And take a break right now. We're going to come back with, somebody who really stood up against the church. An interesting story. But in the meantime, I had a request for some Aradabanjan music. Here is Element Band.
Tumi are vesare vanhava Hetsertis vanakher chokusama Tumi jena mesari sina Korso tintan chokach chokanata
Aradabanjan with the Element Band. Some great, great music by this group. I mean, I can't tell you. It's an ensemble of just some incredible musicians, singers. Do check them out. I will have a link on today's show notes so you can check out all of the great music that they put out. And do support these people that we play over here, okay? It's the only way that they can be encouraged to go forward, as I ask for support for us, too. Hey, by the way, last week I shared with you that our good friend Gor Mkhitaryan is doing a new album. I put out a call for sponsorship. If you are so inclined to help with this project, we do want to make this work very quickly. I am looking for sponsors, and please drop me a line. Let me know that you are interested. In the meantime, let's continue with our show. Last week we got a lot of email, a lot of comments about the information we had put out about the 8 churches that had been burnt in 10 days and the surprise that people had that such an event had taken place and people hadn't really commented or really didn't know about it. In that same vein, let me tell you that there's a lot of stuff that happens, and with the information being at a flow at the rate at which it goes, it's very difficult to sift through and find those things that are important. One of the things that I noticed this week, I was on a Twitter feed, I found something, I forgot whose Twitter post it was on, but it was about Khloe Kardashian. This is one of the sisters, the Kardashian sisters, okay? And it kind of grabbed my attention because not only was there an Armenian name, there was a reference to Bible. Apparently, she split with her boyfriend, and I don't know any of the details, except what I'm going to tell you right now. After she split with her boyfriend, she started tweeting Bible passages. So now the world is getting Bible passages from Khloe Kardashian. And this is what the tweets were all about. And so I clicked on one of the links that was there. And sadly, what you read is that Khloe Kardashian is broken up with her boyfriend. And they had like children, I believe three. And don't quote me. I don't have the article right in front of me, but they had three children. And you think, okay, they're going through all of this, boyfriend, girlfriend. They're going through some major issues between them. But why are the children like in a marginalized kind of position? They're sort of like in the parentheses, right? By the way, they had three children. What happens to these three children? And, you know, this is the whole point of these institutions that we set up, and marriage being one of them, is that it's for the protection of the children so that there is some stability there. And, yeah, a lot of things go wrong, a lot of things happen, but what happens to the children? Very, very important that we never lose sight of that. And so as I was going through this, I saw that there were some Bible passages being put out there. And then, all of a sudden, what hits me is this article that completely escaped me. And when I look at the dateline on it, I figure why it escaped me. It was while we were consumed with all this 100th anniversary of the genocide, a very important piece was written by a former president of the United States, namely Jimmy Carter, who is 90 years old right now. And a lot of people are out on how good he was. I remember voting for him. He was a Democrat. He still is a Democrat. He's a liberal. Very fine man. I think an upstanding man who really, you know, he was a man of principle. And a man of faith. Now, probably on most people's lists, and I know this because I live here in the United States, most people's list, he wasn't a great president. But I think that there's some virtues that we need to just really hone in on, and one of which is his faith, his incredible ability to keep to his principles because of faith. And apparently on April 27th, he's penned an article called Losing My Religion in Equality, which within 3 or 4 days had gone viral all across the internet. It had gone viral, and probably it says a lot about the times and why people are looking for people like this. I was very interested in this story. I read it, and I want to share it with you today. Jimmy Carter, President of the United States. He is also a Nobel Peace Laureate and a longtime human rights champion. Somebody I admire, and I want to just share with you this thing. It says, Losing My Religion for Equality. I have been a practicing Christian all of my life, and a deacon and Bible teacher for many years. My faith is a source of strength and comfort to me, as religious beliefs are to hundreds of millions of people around the world. So my decision to sever my ties with the Southern Baptist Church, or convention, after 6 decades was painful and difficult. It was, however, an unavoidable decision when the convention's leaders, quoting a few carefully selected Bible verses and claiming that Eve was created second to Adam and was responsible for original sin, ordained that women must be subservient to their husbands and prohibited from service as deacons, pastors, and chaplains in military service. This view that women are somehow inferior to men is not restricted to one religion or belief. Women are prevented from playing a full and equal role in many faiths. Nor tragically does its influence stop at the walls of the church, mosques, synagogues, or temples. This discrimination, unjustifiably attributed to a higher authority, has provided a reason and excuse for the deprivation of women's equal rights across the world for centuries. Wild, huh? This is a beautiful article, essay that he's written. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes, and I highly recommend that you read it. But here's the point. At what point do you say enough is enough? At one point do you look at it and you say that, okay, I mean, look at this. Jimmy Carter, Christian, practicing Christian, 60 years in the Southern Baptist Convention. Let me tell you, those of you who are our listeners who are outside of the United States, let me tell you, the Southern Baptist is a very fundamental Bible-based community. Okay, this is not, they have very strict rules. And Jimmy Carter was a practicing member of this convention. And he severs his ties because of what's been said about women. And it's a fundamental argument and expression and belief system regarding women that is being espoused by this convention. And let me tell you, it's pretty prevalent among fundamental Christians throughout. I love the words that he chose here. He says that have taken some carefully selected passages. Okay, you can justify anything based on the Bible. You really can. You can take those justified. You can take passages and justify anything. First of all, there's a few points that I want to make with this essay. Again, please do read it. I'm not doing it justice by selecting bits and pieces. Read it and make your decision on your own. But here's a few points that I want to make. At what point do you say enough is enough? Where you say that, okay, my church, this body is out there, and they're expounding on different ideas and concepts which just don't figure with me. At the beginning of our show, we talk about the disenfranchised members of the church community. Well, what bigger disenfranchisement is there than when your faith doesn't speak to your life? Of course you're going to be disenfranchised. This is a true story. About a couple weeks ago, I was walking into our church office, and where we are right now, we're in the heart of Glendale, a large immigrant population. Most of our services are done in the Armenian language, I would say 95% of them. And there was a lady who was making arrangements for the baptism of her child. And we got into a small little conversation, and I congratulated her. And she was speaking beautiful English. No trace that she was from anywhere else. Unlike many of the people who frequent our church here in Glendale, our parish. Anyway, we finished our conversation, and I went into my office. And later on, as I was talking with my secretary, I was discussing, I said, so when is that baptism? She gave me the dates and everything. And she told me something very interesting, that this lady was born in America. And she's having her child baptized in the Armenian church. Well, that's beautiful. Of course it's beautiful. But here's the interesting thing. Found out that this lady goes to another community, a Protestant community. And when given the option of, why are you baptizing your child here? Well, because this is my church. Interesting, huh? This affinity you feel towards the Armenian church, you're baptizing your child here in the church, but you're getting your spiritual nourishment elsewhere. It's telling you that the church isn't speaking to you. At what point do you cut off that tie? Now, she's made that conscious decision to have her children baptized here. And I believe that that conscious decision is because of a hope, that there is a hope. It's not ending with the current situation the way it is. And that hope is important because it drives you forward to making the next decisions to go ahead and change things. And so I inquired a little bit more, and it turns out that she is a member of a larger congregation, an American Protestant denomination that is Bible-based and is preaching the gospel. And when given the option, why don't you come to our church? Very simply, I don't understand what's going on in here. I don't speak the language. And even I do speak Armenian, it's not in the language that I speak or that I understand. Very, very important. Because we're seeing hundreds of these people, thousands of these people. And when we come back to that one little sentence, Father McKenzie walking from the grave, no one was saved. What is our object here? Is it just to keep a tradition going? Is it just to keep the doors open and saying we've got people who belong but don't believe? Who aren't part of this tradition? Who have no idea about the resurrected Lord? Or are we talking about something that needs fundamentally to be changed? And guess who the changers are going to be? You and me. Jimmy Carter makes this point over here. It's very, very important. He walks away from that church that has given him so much. Do we walk away? I've shared with you in the past, I can't. I can't walk away. Because I fundamentally believe that there is a truth here that needs to be given to people. But that fundamental truth is being hidden. So we're standing on this bridge between life here on earth and eternity. And we're standing on this bridge and we're marveling at the bridge rather than understanding that it has this utilitarian function of connecting one world to another world, one realm to another realm. And the bridge is really secondary. It could be beautiful. It could be all nice and painted and ornamented, but it does have a function. And if we lose sight of that function, what good is that bridge? It becomes just an object. You might as well put it in a museum. Look at it, applaud it, paint pictures of it, write poems to it, but it's just a bridge. Jimmy Carter writes, it is simply self-defeating for any community to discriminate against half of its population. We need to challenge these self-serving, outdated attitudes and practices, as we are seeing in Iran, where women are at the forefront of the battle for democracy and freedom. I understand, however, why many political leaders can be reluctant about stepping into this minefield. Religion and tradition are powerful and sensitive areas to challenge. But my fellow elders and I, who come from many faiths and backgrounds, no longer need to worry about winning votes and avoiding controversy, as we are deeply committed to the challenges and injustice wherever we see it. And that, I think, is a brave statement to say that, yes, we might have been moved by politics, being popular and getting those votes. I applaud that. At least he's being honest. He's coming forward and saying this has been the motive in the past. But I don't have that motive now. There is something greater. The place of women, the place of half of this population, the inequality that exists. And certainly this is something that we all feel. It certainly is the cause to which he is championing at this point. But each of us has a cause. Each of us has a decision that we need to make. And we need to be reconciled with our faith. Our faith has to be a living and real faith that talks to us, that talks to the world, that talks to our interactions with the world. And if it doesn't, we're lost. And at what point do you say enough is enough? I've come to that point many times, and I've always walked away saying I can't break off from the church because it's different. Once you're in it, it's one view, and you have an opportunity to effectuate, to make that change from within, and it's quite different from trying to make it from without, because from without, you're somebody from the outside trying to bring your will and trying to bring your issues to an entity, that a body that could just stand there and say that, hey, wait a minute, this is who we are. Leave us alone. But when you're inside, you look at it and you say, I want to work towards that. I know that there's something better. It's like in your family, right? Something's wrong in your family. You have a few choices. You could walk out. You could walk out the door and just leave it. Many people have. And let the family decide their own issues, right? And then you come back in a couple of years and you say, okay, I'm back. I'm going to fix you guys. And say, hey, wait a minute. We're fine. We're fine. Leave us alone. You're the one who walked out. But if you stay within and you see those issues, you work with your family members, you work with that family, and you say, there is a better solution. There is a better life. And I want to work towards that. That's a decision that every person has to come to terms with and make it work. Now, last week I shared with you an idea that we had about the His Holiness Project. And it's a work in progress right now, because there's so many dimensions, and realistically, how can we reach these top guys? And it's important. Now, what Jimmy Carter says in this article, and another reason why I found it fascinating, was really there is a group of people that do care about these things, and that His Holiness Project can work. Because listen, he mentioned in the passage I read a few minutes ago, he mentions the elders. Well, who are those elders? Listen to this. It says, the elders are an independent group of eminent global leaders brought together by former South African President Nelson Mandela, who offer their influence and expertise to support peace building, help address major causes of human suffering, and promote the shared interests of humanity. We have decided to draw particular attention to the responsibility of religious and traditional leaders in ensuring equality and human rights, and have recently published a statement that declares the justification of discrimination against women and girls on grounds of religion or tradition, as if it were prescribed by a higher authority, is unacceptable. Wow. His Holiness Project, there it is. There's the groundwork for it. Now, I want to thank Ani. She sent me an interesting link to a peace summit which took place about a decade ago, or a little bit over than a decade ago. And I'll put that link on today's show notes. I'll put a few different links, so do check out the show notes today. But what we described as His Holiness Project really has some groundworks, which obviously it was. But now think about what I was saying earlier. Do you work from within? Do you work from without? And I think the His Holiness Project has to be worked out from within. And that's why, get ready. Get ready for some revolution, right? Get ready for what is about to come. And the only ones who can bring about that revolution are going to be from within. Remember Christ's words, seek not the kingdom of God. He says, you're looking all over the world. Seek it not outside of you, but it's inside of you. It's in your heart. You know, you're looking all over the place. Is the kingdom there? Is the kingdom there? You know, the kingdom is within you. And I heard a very beautiful description the other day. It was in a sermon that was recited by Bishop Sog. Just a beautiful little metaphor that I don't know if I'd heard it exactly placed this way, but he was talking about the divinity of Christ and how could Christ come apart from God and be also a part of God. And in this little metaphor that he used, he says, imagine a bottle that you fill up with ocean water. And then you toss that bottle inside the ocean. Now, can you tell me where what the water is? Is the water part of the ocean? Or is the water inside of the bottle? No, it's all around. And I think in the same way, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, this peace on earth, has to be all-consuming. It has to be without us, of course, because there's other players in the equation. But it also has to begin from within. And all of us being a part of a community of believers, being the part of body of Christ. The Christ that says that came into this world, peace on earth, goodwill to men. That was what the angels heralded, right? For to you is born a Savior, peace on earth, goodwill to men. Okay. Do we believe this? Or is it just something we're going to throw on a Christmas card in December? No, we believe it. And this is where the challenge is. This is what we need to do. So I'll give you a lot of stuff. Take a look at some of this writing over here. I'll be back in a couple minutes to share with you some final thoughts. Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with this broadcast, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there's a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So we look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Rosgen.
We have so many projects that are on our table right now. In His Shoes is doing some incredible work. Epostle, the voice of In His Shoes. We're working out so many little idiosyncrasies, as we'd like to call them, of how to combine everything and make everything work. We're not here to start a new religion, a new church. We're here to really to amplify and glorify what we do have. And that glory is life. That glory is love. That glory is the peace that comes to us from Christ. Not something apart from ourselves, but something within us, something all around us. And it is the road to salvation. In other words, if you have that peace, if you have that love in your heart, you can't get lost. Your life doesn't end in a grave. It goes beyond it, and it lives forever. You have a way to make yourself live forever, and that's by becoming part of that, by becoming part of that life that is bigger than yours. And so get involved. Get involved where you can. If you believe in this ministry, please support it. Susie tells you some of the physical needs that we have. We have a lot of emotional, spiritual needs that are on the table as well. And that includes the loneliness that we sometimes feel when we start talking about these things. So do spread the news. Get these links out to people. Share the podcast. Share In His Shoes page. Share the message. Comment about it. Put it on Facebook. And we're all over the place. So do follow us on Facebook. Do check out the website, inhisshoes.org. And share it. And keep us always in your prayers. Hey, listen, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us and really keeping us in your prayers. I appreciate all of the comments. I'm sorry if I don't get back to you as quick as I want to. I do want to do it. And I think I have to adopt a different way of doing things. I read an email and I get excited about it. And I say, oh, I've got to write back. I got to write back when I got a little time. And then we never have the time, right? I've got to just adopt that. I got to get disciplined to, as I see the email, to write back something. But sometimes I want to say so much. And really, you'll pardon me. You'll forgive me for not writing back immediately. But I do appreciate all of the comments, all of the well wishes that you send our way. And I do feel all of your prayers. I want to thank you on behalf of our team. Even the team members that might not be so readily accessible. That includes my dad. Hey, he would have been 83 tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be remembering that because he lives in Dad. You do live inside of me. And that is the life going on. And of course, on behalf of Ken out there in Jakarta, hope you're enjoying your time and you're not caught up with the natives. And Susie, our producer. This is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off by one top minutes.